Hello, everybody, and welcome to our Vital Health Community Call. It is the second to the last call for the year 2019, and also the second to the last call of the decade. We're heading into a whole new decade in just a little over a month. And, you know, it's a time for us to be reflecting on what is it that we want for ourselves in the next decade? What do we want to bring forward that's serving us, habits and attitudes? And what do we want to let go of that's not serving us? We do a little ritual, if you want to call it that, a little thing that we do every year at right around the solstice, the winter solstice. And we invite friends over, and they've been doing it with us for the last almost 20 years. And we basically light candles and we say, okay, what do we want to bring forward with us into the light? Because as you know, the solstice is when, you know, the days start to get longer again. So what do you want to bring forward in the light? And what do you want to leave behind in the dark? So you may want to start thinking about that in terms of the decade switch. Like, what habits do you have right now that are serving you? What attitudes do you have right now that are serving you? And which ones aren't? And which ones do you want to just leave behind? And then which ones do you want to take forward into the new decade? So I'm excited about that. So we're going to be answering your questions. And this is, for those of you who are new to the community, welcome. This is a very supportive and loving community. And we all get together 3 times a month in the Vital community. But this particular time is for answering questions. And these calls are either led by me or one of my certified coaches. And we're here to support you in whatever way you need for your health. What we're doing here is not intended to replace your relationship with a healthcare professional, because we don't know your health on an intimate level, and that's what you go to your doctor for. But what we do here is we educate you, and we help you to see what choices you can be making in your diet and your lifestyle and your attitudes, your stress management, that will support you with whatever it is that's going on for you. And then you can take that back if you're under the care of a doctor, or just take it back to your family and make decisions as to how you're going to live your life to be that vibrant and unstoppable you that we all have the potential to be. So the way these calls work is to raise your hand, *2 if you're on the telephone. Click the button that says raise hand if you're on the web call, where you just are talking through your computer. And then if you're not on either of those, there's the chat, and you can put in questions in the Q&A or the chat. The Q&A is for people to, usually they type in advance, and only I see that. The chat is where there's a conversation, and I love the conversations that generally ensue. So I'd like to start with the Q&A. The Q&A is possibly people have put in questions in advance, and I do see some. So I'm going to start with those, and then we'll move on. And if you have your hand raised, we'll go to hand raises and chat intermixed. So Edie, yes, welcome. I'm so glad that you're here. Other than its tendency to estrogenic effects, why do you not care for soy? It's high on the allergy list. So it's not that I don't, it's not that I am against soy. I think that as long as it's organic, non-GMO is great. And edamame is a good form of it. I think that people overuse it and they put soy protein into everything and they process it and isolate it. But if you don't have a tendency to have an allergy to it, and the way we know that is, you know, you take it out for a while and then add it back in and see. If you happen to be high estrogen, this may not be a great thing to be doing, but you're not. And then edamame tends to be the best form. Edamame, which is the fresh raw form, or, you know, lightly cooked, but it's fresh, fresh out of the ground rather than processed. And then miso and tempeh, which are the fermented forms. Let me grab some water. Edie, I've been trying to support my adrenals for over a year with ashwagandha and tyrosine, but I still seem to be out of balance with afternoon fatigue and dawn effect high AM blood sugars. I just started Adrenal Cortex by Thorne, but now I'm scared that I shouldn't be taking this. Can it exacerbate anxiety? When would you use bovine adrenal cortex and when would you not? Great question. Yes. So I usually only use bovine adrenal cortex when somebody's really flatlined, especially if you're having high adrenals at certain points of the day and low at others. that can make it actually worse. And yes, it can exacerbate anxiety. I will tell you about someone who had really low adrenals and we were working on it. And, you know, sure, she was gradually making a shift. And when I saw her, you know, I only talked to her every few months. And when I saw her adrenal test again, I was like, what the heck did you do? Her numbers were off the charts. She had high peaks. It wasn't like it was all across the board, but like late afternoon, oh my God, it was so high. And she says, yeah, and I've been anxious and all this and sweaty. And I said, what did you do? Is this just from, did you add something else? She goes, oh, I started this bovine adrenal cortex product. And it shot her way up. And it was very quickly it shot her way up. So I usually don't do it unless somebody's really low. But you're having, you're not saying, I don't remember what you are, where you're at, but, afternoon fatigue. Yeah. So I would be looking, you know, ashwagandha is great. Tyrosine is great, but there's a lot of adaptogens. And if you go into the adrenal, module part five, the adrenal program, which I know you have still access to from having been in ERC, you have access to a document that I put together that lists a bunch of herbs. And so you can look through that and get a feel for which ones you might want to add. But I would say possibly licorice that you would take in the early afternoon, possibly some, ginseng. Yeah, I was thinking of the fancy word for ginseng, but Eleuthero. But ginseng, possibly, you know, again, maybe taking it in the morning, afternoon. I don't know what your early morning numbers are, but I would expect that the high blood sugars, you probably have high cortisol in the morning, so you wouldn't want to be taking something that's going to raise it. What else? One thing you might look into would be rhodiola. Rhodiola can have some good effects on cortisol, but read about it and see if it matches. If you're reading it and goes, no, but I don't have that, and or that, and that, it doesn't match, then I would, you know, so I would just try switching it up. If you've been taking just ashwagandha and tyrosine for a year, that's obviously not enough. And because they're not magic bullets, right? So it's a matter of playing with other adaptogens and seeing. I'm a little concerned about that, the bovine, because it could exacerbate anxiety. And then I've noticed hair mineral testing is getting popular with some practitioners to look at minerals broadly. I don't believe this is a test you recommend often. What are your thoughts on the accuracy and validity? You know, I use hair mineral testing for heavy metals. I don't think that the research is there to show that it's going to show you what the levels of the minerals like calcium and zinc and all that kind of stuff is actually there. I would much prefer that you do something like the test that if they call it One or they call it NutriVal from Genova. Or something like SpectraCell, which looks at actually the amounts in the blood cells, because there's no one place where you can get good, accurate indications of minerals. So yeah, it's getting popular again. It was popular years ago. It's never something I've really taken much stock in. Let's see. Yeah, I don't buy into that. I don't know that that's really true. I would want to know, you said that it shows you should stop vitamin D. I would be looking differently at that. If your vitamin D levels are not, your blood levels of vitamin D are pretty accurate. Zinc is pretty accurate in red blood cells or white blood cells. and also alkaline phosphatase on your blood. So that's just my opinion. Let's see, refresh. Okay. Give me a second. I'm going to grab some water. My throat is dry. All right. So let me go to the call because I think I saw some hands up. I see Mary's hand up. Hi, Mary.
Hi. How are you today?
Good. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you for asking. I've got a couple of questions for you, two, actually, nothing major. Just a really curious one, because it's been coming up in some of the literature that I've been reading with ketogenic and carcinoma and all that sort of stuff. So just curious, wheatgrass, obviously juice, Is that an issue because it's a grain and it's got, you know, lecithin or not lecithin, it's got lectins in it or something like that, that it actually is detrimental, not actually a good thing?
You know, without seeing what you're reading, you know, wheatgrass has been purported and shown, you know, like at Hippocrates and other places to be super helpful. And when you just say somebody said that this isn't good, I want to see their reasons, their research, their mechanisms, et cetera. Like, there's a lot of people who have opinions, and they state their opinions as facts. And nothing drives me crazier than when people state their opinions as facts. Soy's a bad food. No, that's your opinion that soy's bad. Right? Whereas fact is heterocyclic amines found in charbroiled meats and cigarettes and other things are detrimental. That's not an opinion. That's a fact. It's been proven. Right? Wheatgrass juice, the value of wheatgrass juice. Again, it's not a fact that wheatgrass juice is good. It can't be a fact that wheatgrass juice is bad. It's an individual, like, how does it affect an individual person's physiology? Because it comes from a gluten grain.
That's because it's gluten, right? Yes,
right. It doesn't contain gluten, but you can, like, say you don't know how they cut it, right? So if they cut it too close to the seed, then you could have some of the gluten from the remnant of the seed in your stuff. So I don't think powdered gluten, unless you check with them, right? Like, there's certain companies that say, no, we do this and we do that, and it's guaranteed certified gluten-free. So you have to be careful about that. And then there's the glutenate agglutinogens that can be in there that some people can have a sensitivity to. So I think wheatgrasses might be good for some, might not be good for others.
I guess because there's a whole huge thing about, you know, glyphosate as well, which is typically in grains. So that's the one thing. But I guess you'd have to check your source to just make sure that it's organic, I suppose.
And then 100% organic, right? You can do not ever do wheat unless it's organic certified because the glyphosate, absolutely.
Right. And one person that mentioned it was Dr. Nasha Winters. I'm not sure if you were familiar with her work. And the other one was, I forget his name, the grungy guy, the guy from the Paradox, Plant Paradox. He's somebody else who also had mentioned it too, I guess.
Well, Gundry thinks everything is bad except for his supplements and meat. So, you know, you gotta, like, take it with a grain of salt.
Yeah, I know, because he's got, like, so many things on his, like, no list that have less lectins in it that I'm like, okay, well, what the heck am I gonna eat now? I like cucumbers.
Don't worry about it.
So, yeah. Okay. So that was
Unless you have a problem with it. You know, lectins are in everything. They're big tough markers. And when people respond poorly to a food that's otherwise healthy, it's not the food's fault. It's not like you can contaminate or condemn it, like, you know, processed Wonder Bread is a bad food for everybody, right?
Of course.
But there's certain foods that we don't know, and it's the body. It's the body's inability to handle things properly or in excess, in large amounts. So, for example, raw kidney beans. Don't ever try to sprout kidney beans. They have such high levels of lectins that it's dangerous, right? That's like a rare rarity. And legumes, you know, in general, not lentils so much. You can sprout lentils and do fine with them. So it's just really taking everything with a grain of salt or a grain of salt.
No pun intended. Right?
But, you know, I don't take anything he says seriously because he condemns everything. Don't eat anything, basically. And it's take my supplements, you know, and if you want to eat things that are on my no list, take my supplements and it'll make you handle them properly, or eat meat. Basically, is all that doesn't have lectin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, I actually went through and read his book, and just because I was curious to see. I mean, some things, it makes sense because I've heard it before, and I've heard you say things, but some things on his no list, I'm like, really? Like, I personally never had any issues. If anything, I've benefited from it, to be quite honest.
Exactly. I have an article coming out on lectins very soon. It's going to be posted to my blog post. My blog, I have to get it edited and proofed and stuff. But it's a two-part article, very detailed on lectins.
Well, we have a wheatgrass grower in the Toronto area, just north of Toronto, and I've been overdosing, like 10 ounces a day. He freezes it into cubes and stuff. And, you know, my first round before my pre-accident, I mean, I was downing it like crazy, and I didn't have any reaction. If anything, it might have probably helped because I actually reversed everything. So I'm not quite sure. I was just kind of now, as I'm reading things, and then I was reading Nisha Winter's book, which is quite good as well.
What's the name of her book?
Her book is The Metabolic Approach to Cancer.
Okay.
Yeah, it's quite good. She mentions a little bit of lectins if you have gut issues.
Yep.
And then she just like, you know, remove them for 30 days, do a 30 day like, you know, lectin removal and just test and then reintroduce them in testing, kind of like what you say and whatnot.
Exactly.
You know, so it's quite an extensive book. It's quite good. It's a good read. I would highly recommend
it. I'm curious to see what she says, like what's the science behind what she says about the wheatgrass, unless it's an individual lack of tolerance.
She doesn't recommend any grasses at all, like any grain grasses, no barley, no nothing as well.
Yes.
I can't remember. I mean, it's in her book and she does explain it. I just don't remember. I know one of the reasons was, I think it was gluten. I think the other one was glyphosate and, maybe it was organic. And there was another reason, but I don't remember, but it's, she's lovely.
I'll look at that.
Yeah.
Well, I'll you know, something because soy, you know, idiot asked a question about soy and now you're talking here. And it's the same thing, like all of the people who are anti-soy, they're not distinguishing between fermented and organic.
Right.
And you look and they're going, but all the studies that all, if you really look at the research, there's a lot of really good research on organic, especially fermented or fresh edamame type of soy because of some of the chemicals that it has in there that are protective. But when you look at things in isolation, like, okay, yeah, of course don't eat anything like wheatgrass or anything like that if it's not organic because of the glyphosate, right? You absolutely have to be careful with that. But you can't just lump a food because the commercial way of processing it is bad. You can't lump it into the bad category without distinguishing, like, you know, here's how to do it properly. So.
Yeah. No, exactly. Excellent. Now, just a really quick question with my next question, and it's actually a personal question to you because I know that you've mentioned just a couple of times. I've heard you mention this, and you mentioned it just as you're doing the Fasting with Food Challenge. Now, you mentioned that you yourself personally fast with water every 4 weeks, and I'm wondering why you do it so often, and because you're healthy. You know what I mean? Like, you eat well and all that sort of stuff. So I'm like, I'm surprised that you do it, like, you tend to do it every month.
Yeah, like it's any usually works out to be more like every 6 weeks. But yeah, I'm happy to answer that question. I do my best to be healthy and eat healthy, but I live in a toxic world and we're always exposed to toxins, right? I live in a box, right? I live in a box that was built 25 years ago and, you know, I haven't painted it in that long except for one room where it was painted with non-VOC paint, but there's materials that we're breathing in. There's stress. I travel a tremendous amount. I'm on airplanes a lot, and you pick up all kinds of things in that kind of environment. So I'm exposed to EMF stressors. I'm not very good about, you know, turning the Wi-Fi off at night. So I'm exposed to EMF stressors. And when it comes to food, when I travel, yeah, I don't go off my diet plan, but I eat at weird hours. And I sometimes eat too much because it's like, oh, there's actually real food here that I can eat. And then I pound it in, right?
Yes.
So I'm not ashamed, right? So I figure that that helps me to get back on track. Because once you go off track and start to eat too much and eat late at night, for me, it's hard to get back on. I'm home now and I'm still like reaching for something at 10 o'clock at night because my body got used to wanting food. Plus, I don't sleep as well as I should. I'm getting better. I've been doing the 8-hour stretches much more often now. But this last week was, you know, getting ready for this challenge and a whole bunch of other stuff and all the travel. I didn't sleep very much.
Yeah.
So for me, it's a protection thing. For me, it's like fasting is so healing and it just gives the body a reset that I want to do it on a regular basis. So it generally works out. I try to do it once a month, but usually it works out more like 6 weeks, depending on my travel schedule and whatever else. But it just feels so good, and it gives my gut a break. And I have, genetically, my gut is not the best. I have all those FUT2 genes and other things. So it's, for me, it's an insurance policy.
Right. Yeah, I hear you on that one there. I've been experimenting myself with trying to do 5-day fast as well. And I know I finally have been successful on two of them where I haven't rebounded too much, because I know I'll rebound it the first time, like the next day. I'm fine. It's just that as soon as I taste food, I'm like, oh my God, this tastes so delicious. And then I overeat.
I know. Right.
You know, and it's so hard.
Yep.
Yeah, that's the hardest part. It's the part, the actual water fast is not hard. It's actually when you get back on food that's hard and trying to control, because I had a couple times that I ate stuff that I guess, and still healthy food, is just maybe a little bit too hard on my system. Like, you know, there were like nuts, and maybe I had something with nuts that had, and I didn't realize, that had like erythritol or something, like an alcohol sugar in it, and my whole glands just swelled up, and I thought, holy crow, what the hell? So, okay, one more question came on mind. Now, if you want to go back and come back, you can, but this will be my last question, because I have to go to an appointment myself. So, but I was just curious, and it's more on probably from your chiropractic, maybe from your chiropractic training that you might be able to answer this question, and maybe for your other training as well. Okay, so last year I got into a head-on collision. Now, prior to that, I have never really had issues with my gut. Like, I wasn't bloated. Like, oh, yeah, I was bloated sometimes here when you're on your cycle or whatever the case is. But I've never been, like, bloated on a consistent basis, or if I ate something, it would bloat me or whatever the case is. So I've never really had anything that major, unless I really ate something really, really bad and it, you know, hurt my stomach. But for the most part, I've always had a pretty good gut, like, in terms of, like, you know, and I don't, you know, anyways. So, but post my car accident.
Yeah.
Which since my car accident, I have noticed, and one of my practitioners, who is a chiropractor, naturopath, and does something called matrix repatterning, and he mentioned it, and I thought, you know, why do I feel more bloated these days? Like, you know, for the last year, I've been feeling a little bit more bloated and whatnot, and I felt it kind of within the first 3-4 months, I said, I guess, post my accident, like within the accident when it happened, and I kind of was just in my head. I thought, okay, I don't know. But then when he was going through my body, he said, have you been feeling bloated since your accident? And I thought, oh, that's interesting that he said that. And I said, as a matter of fact, I have. So I'm just curious. He didn't really explain it to me. I don't know. Maybe he did. Maybe I tuned out. But is there a correlation between that?
Yes. Yes.
How do I fix it?
Yeah, there is. So gut-brain connection, vagus nerve. You know, getting in an accident is a physiologic trauma, so it affects the vagus nerve and the impact of the signals to and from the gut and the brain.
Okay.
So it's a sympathetic response, so that does that. And I have seen some stuff, and I can't remember where I saw it, on the impact of trauma on the microbiome. So,
you know, I think I heard a particular gentleman talk about it. I don't remember which doctor it was, and I think Dr. Mitty, he interviewed him, and I think now that I mentioned, I think he did say something about the gut-brain connection when it comes to an impact.
Yeah, there's a bunch of it. I just did a search on it. Altered trauma can impact our gut bacteria. The microbiome in post-traumatic stress disorder and trauma, characterizing the gut microbiome in trauma. So just put in the search words. Trauma and microbiome. Yeah, in Google. There's a bunch of them, and they're all on, you know, on reputable. Some of them are not, but a lot of reputable, reputable sites.
Okay.
So you know, you might want to really look at, right, what do you do? What can you do to reset it? What, you know, your microbiome. I don't know that that's exactly, you know, hard to know what probiotics other than experimentation, but.
Yeah.
You know, it might be worthwhile to look at your gut.
Oh, well, I did a gut test pre-accident, and I had a bug there, but that wasn't, or it might have been post-accident. I can't remember when I did it, and there was some sort of bug in there. So we've cleared it, and then I just did, I'm just doing a follow-up gut. I just did a follow-up, Zoomer test? Zoomer?
Yeah.
I just did a gut Zoomer test. And I'm waiting to get results from that.
Yeah, I don't know if that one tests the normal flora. So that's another thing to look at. Some of these tests are really good at testing for abnormal flora, but they don't test your normal. And if you're out of balance, like I've seen people with like zero bifidobacter, right? Like a lot of people with zero bifidobacter in their gut when they do that. So that's
so did you say to also test my normal flora?
Your good flora, right. Like the doctor's data test is my favorite because it does that. Some of the others don't.
Which is that one that you just mentioned? The
Dr.
one?
Zeta. Dr. Zeta.
Z-A-T-A?
Z-A-T-A. Doctors Data, D-A-T-A.
Oh, Data, like Data. Okay.
Yeah, Doctors Data. And they have a microbiology, and they also have a comprehensive chem screen in your gut. And I love to see that because sometimes, you know, you go about killing the bad guys, but they come back, they grow again because there's not enough of your normal good guys to counteract them. And then they just come back as soon as you're exposed to something or under stress or whatever.
Right. Interesting. Well, I'm going through the also, and I don't know if this could be, because in terms of the gut, the brain connection, I'm doing Dr. Pompa's heavy metal protocol. I don't know if you're familiar with his program with that. And I'm right now I'm doing the brain phase. I'm doing two rounds of the brain phase. So I don't know if that's been disturbing my gut because of the gut brain connection there. Or if it's just still, you know, reminiscent from the accident. I still haven't cleared stuff or whatever the case is. I don't know, but it's, not very comfortable, to be honest. And I'm not used to it. I don't have issues like this on an ongoing basis. Like I said, it's like maybe one day before my period, and that was it. But now it's like if I eat something, and if I don't eat something, sometimes I feel like bloated. I do water. Like I do a 24-hour, 36-hour, even 3-day water fast in the first day or so. I'm feeling bloated just drinking water. I'm thinking, okay, that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
So, but, okay. All right, I'll look into this and see. Great. Thank you. That's all.
Okay. Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. So if you have a question, raise your hand, star 2. If you want to communicate or contribute anything or share some wins, you can also do the same thing, star 2, and put up your hand with the hit the raise hand button. I'm going to go back to the chat and the Q&A to see if anybody else has added questions. Chat. All right. Let's see. Yeah, Mary says soy is one of the highest GMO. Right. I'm assuming, like, any time you're talking soy, it must be organic. And that's a big thing. And that's where, you know, sometimes the edamame, where you go to just a Japanese restaurant and order edamame, most likely they're not getting organic. And so that's the thing. And soy should be properly fermented. Although, I mean, I think that the fresh works, the edamame works. I don't know if you have any indications or data on why the edamame wouldn't, Diana, but Angelica says, speaking of soy, I tasted some soy yogurt today in the Netherlands, very tasty. And I will be looking at any kind of yogurts really carefully. I don't know how they do it overseas, but here most of the companies that make non-dairy yogurts, they're very sweet. They add a lot of sugar or, you know, fruit preserves or something like that to them. So be careful, you know, when you're doing that. The yogurt can be made from anything, seriously. I mean, I've done it with hemp seeds and cashews and macadamia nuts and Brazil nuts and coconut and everything. You can make a fermented product like that that's delicious. All right, I don't see any other questions there. You guys are easy today. So who's doing the, I see somebody just raised their hand. Great. Who's doing the fasting with food challenge? Type in the chat and let me know. I'm really enjoying it so far. Okay. So Brooks Eugene H, New Hampshire. Hello.
Hi, Dr. Rita Marie. It's actually Robin.
Robin. Oh, Brooks. Yes. Hi. What a surprise. Yeah.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm trying to get back into some stuff, you know, but you know me. I'll come in for a little bit, disappear again, then come back. But good purpose now to kind of be helping me because my daughter's stepdaughter has had a lot of gut issues. And I actually ordered the Dr. Data test, but I had to come back from California. She has trouble with constipation. It's so complicated, but we'll get into that. But I did get the wheat zoomer. Steph had ordered it, so I'm kind of working with Steph once we get some of that done because I do believe her gut is severely compromised from as early as being a baby, lots of antibiotics, lots of Miralax, all that other stuff.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Thankfully for, like, all the calls and stuff that I've been listening to, I did I think it was Janine that ended up mentioning the site, Parents Against Marilac. So I was able to look into that and give that information to my daughter. So she ended up, since last April, they took her off of Marilac and stuff, and it's been good, but she's had to have enemas and all this other stuff. But then I went out to California, and I kind of just, you know, I just took all the information that I knew from everything that I knew, and we really just tried to make sure we got her gluten, dairy free. I got this kid going to the bathroom 2 or 3 times a day. Then she'd go to the biological parents. She'd come back. She'd be constipated again. It's like, what are you people doing? You know, so, and the parents wanted proof that, you know, that gluten was an issue because they're just non-believers. Mm. So I did get the Zoomer, and I'm going back over Thanksgiving, and then as soon as I can get her probably regular again, do the Dr. Data times 3 and then book some stuff to do. But I did get the wheat Zoomer information back. But I guess I have some questions because I thought she had more issues probably with dairy, but the wheat Zoomer came back that she definitely was on the high side with wheat. She was like, I think it was like 5.3, which mm-hmm. I don't, like, let's say if 6 was the top number. So she was extremely high in the red on that. And then the permeability, am I saying that right? The intestinal permeability?
Uh-huh.
I think it was like 4.3. So she was extremely high there. But then the next thing it showed was eggs and corn. Corn was high. It went wheat, corn, then eggs, then dairy. But the only thing is, she's pretty much was dairy free. So if you're not eating those foods, will they not show up that much?
And then the numbers will go down, definitely. I have to look it back to see how they're doing it. If you're doing it in the stool, they tend to stay higher than in the blood. Because what happens is if they're like living in the epithelium in the blood, in the gut, then they're just like soldiers waiting to attack. And when something comes in, they'll attack. So you'll see them in the stool. But they're not active in the bloodstream as much if the person's been off of it for a while. So I have to look at the mechanism of that test. I haven't done those, the Zoomers yet. It definitely does go down when people are off of things. I mean, that definitely. It has a tendency to get lower if the person's off of it, and then will go higher when they go back on it.
Okay, I guess, but that would be that's what's kind of what I'm curious about is, if she's got high gut permeability, that means that she's got, like, her gut's really leaking, right? If she's on the high side, does that mean a lot of stuff is going through, like, that she probably is showing sensitivity? Like, broccoli showed up because we did 4 Zoomers, and then the food sensitivity. Broccoli came up as a high sensitivity, but she eats broccoli every day.
Yeah, so that's some of the permeability.
That's from that. So it doesn't mean that she's definitely sensitive to that. It's just that once we heal the gut, if she did that sensitivity test again, that may not be there, right?
Exactly. Yeah, and there may be some that are, like, permanent. That'll be there all the time that she just needs to stay away from. And then there's others that are transient, and they're, like, opportunistic because of the leaky gut. I've done that work with people where we run the test, and they've got, like, 27 foods that show up allergic. And they're like, huh? It's all the food I eat all the time. Yeah. And then if you don't heal the leaky gut and you just stay away from those foods and you do the test again, those foods won't show up anymore, but the stuff that you started eating again on a regular basis will.
Okay. So I guess until I get the Dr. Data test and then we work on something more, like, substantial, like, I'm just kind of concerned. I was starting to give her a lot of stuff with egg in it, like, because her diet was so limited. And when I was out there, this kid – you know, she was literally my daughter would have to give her an enema like at least once a week. I get out there, she was going to the bathroom, you know, 2 or 3 times a day. The only other thing that I did was I gave her, which was weird, is I had her taking magnesium baths. And as soon as she had a magnesium bath, the next day she went 3 times in a row.
That's right, because it gets absorbed through the skin. And a lot of people don't digest or absorb their magnesium real well because of stomach acid and other reasons. So that's a great way to do it. Magnesium really, really well through the skin, and the hot baths with the Epsom salts or other things in there tend to work really well. So it sounds like you need to work on the leaky gut. I don't think you need to wait for a doctor's data test to come back. I think you take away anything that showed up as a sensitivity. And the ones that are on the lower end, you only remove them for a month, and then you can, you know, you can just intermittently give it to her, right? But the stuff that showed up in the high sensitivity area needs to be removed for more like 3 to 6 months while you're healing the leaky gut. Some of it, if it's just a little, you're not eating a lot of it, and it's a low sensitivity, they can rotate them in, but I'd usually leave them off of them for a month to let the gut to heal.
So a month. Okay.
And then you can do to heal the gut, right? So, I don't know. How old is this girl?
She's 10.
Yeah. Okay. So something like glutamine might be helpful. Unless she tends to be one of these nervous Nelly kids that's anxious all the time. And then I would be careful. Just go slowly with glutamine. Vitamin A is oftentimes super important, and depending on what her genetics look like, she may have trouble converting beta carotene to A. So vitamin A is super important for healing that lining. Vitamin B1 is super important. And you have access to the whole grand kind of program and the protocol.
Right. And I did look at that. That's how some of the stuff I came up with. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, it's just, I guess, do you also, I guess my other question would be is, it's the biological parents that, just don't seem to really understand this. Like, so even when we, like, she primarily was gluten and dairy free, but when we got to do the testing, I know that, like, the testing may not come through all the way. Like, if she only intermittently gets exposed to gluten once a week, and it might be like one cookie or something like that, then if she really had more severity, like celiac or something, it probably would show up. So the parents actually really kind of wanted to expose her to dairy and gluten before the test. But I'm like, you really don't want to do that. This kid obviously shows signs of gluten. Like the mom had her, I had her going 2 times a day for 4 days. She went with the mom. And then on that Saturday, the mom ended up deciding to go to a bakery. And she said to me, I think I asked if it was gluten-free. But I'm like, once she's in a bakery, how can it be gluten-free? Right. And then she goes, I thought you knew it was gluten free. She goes, and I said, well, what about the dairy? Oh, I didn't even think about asking.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, it's an emotional attachment to food that people have, and they've got to, that working with that piece is super important. It's like, this is your kid's health, and these are the things that can be happening to your child as a result. The constipation is just, it's a symptom, but it's a symptom of major imbalances that are going on inside. And, you know, I don't know what to say about getting, you know, it's really a coaching situation. And now it's your daughter. You said biological mother is.
No. Okay. So this is what's confusing. My daughter got into a relationship with a guy that had primary custody of his child. Mm. So then when they got together, of course, then, you know, my daughter was the one that was the primary caregiver, like Monday through, you know, Friday. And then the mom had her on the weekend. Well, now my daughter and the boyfriend aren't together anymore. So, but my daughter, because both parents, they live 2 hours apart, so my daughter's the one that had primary care. Mm-hmm. My daughter's the one that's done the most health stuff for this child because the parents didn't have insurance and didn't do anything. Like, my daughter's the one that's paying for the Zoomer and the Dr. Dater, but my daughter's mm-hmm. also that she's just done. She's fried because, again, she took her to, you know, places. My daughter, this little girl, like, trusts my daughter so much. Like, she even knows, like, she can feel her body, like, when she needs an enema. Like, she had gone with her mom that time. She had that cookie. And then the next, like, 2 days later, she's trying to go to the bathroom. And they were in the bathroom together. And then she's like, I think I need an enema. She was, are you trying to strain? So she has anal fissures. She had anal fissures.
Oh, yeah. It's a tough
and
situation.
That's a really tough situation. And here's what I'm hoping is, do conventional doctors, will they take the Dr. Dater and the Wheat Zoomer seriously? Because the GI specialist that went to in April, she was so, you know, compacted at that time. Like, I even think she had megacolon too. They said if they couldn't get this corrected and keep her cleaned out, that they were looking at, they possibly thought she had, for the anal disalignment or something. They wanted to do maybe surgery. She had a skin tag, probably from an anal fissure. They wanted to do Botox. Now, this is why I'm saying is I went out there and, you know, my daughter did a great job, but we proved that this kid, if she's going 2 to 3 times a day on a clean diet, she doesn't need surgery.
She doesn't need surgery. No. Yeah, it depends. I mean, conventional docs, some of them have very closed minds about anything. Oh, that's too severe. Let's just do surgery. It's too severe to make her go off of foods, right? It's an insane attitude that a lot of doctors do have. So I feel for you in this situation because you don't have much control. Your daughter, you know, sends her to the mother and then backs it up. The only thing I could say is really working with the kid because she's 10. It's not like she's 3, right? She's 10.
Right.
And explaining to her the downsides of even indulging, you know, once a week, and really getting educate her. 10-year-olds can understand. So that's where I would work with this. I would really work with you and your daughter working with her and her attitude.
Yeah,
and
okay.
Her saying no.
Yeah, I think that's kind of helped me the most, and to be able to kind of like, okay, that's where it needs to go, because the little girl had a date with her dad and they were supposed to be going out and he wanted to take her out to eat. And my daughter said, I don't think that's a good idea. Where are you going to take her? You know, and he's like, you're just going to give her blah, blah, blah. Well, they went and the little girl is 10. She didn't understand that, you know, she used to go out so she would get French fries. And I explained to her, I go, Violet, you don't even understand. And I go, but French fries are probably not gluten-free. And I told her all the reasons why. Most of them are coated. The fry lid is not clean. So now she won't eat French fries out. But I'm like, it's so easy to cook them at home. She was eating them almost every day because I just baked them in the oven for her, you know.
Yeah.
But
well, here's the thing.
Like,
this is great because you started it. That's where you're so good. You understand. You can explain it and you can make her alternatives. And the more she knows, like, really give her – we have lists. In, you know, you still have access to the, I think, that module in the ERC that has, you know, the like five-stage, these are the hidden sources of gluten. These are the hidden sources of dairy. She's old enough to read. She's old enough to understand. And just tell her when you go out with your mom or dad, you know, if you're in a restaurant, the safe thing to order is, you know, a salad and a baked potato, you know, or fish or something like that versus anything. Any grains in a restaurant are not going to be gluten-free necessarily.
Right.
And they even found, Dr. O'Brien put out a thing where there was a study that they did where they tested all these gluten, supposed gluten-free, naturally gluten-free products, you know, like rice or quinoa.
Right, I saw that, yeah.
80% of them were gluten-free and 20% still had traces of gluten because of what happens, you know, behind the scenes that we don't see in a plant. So I don't eat grains at all. I just don't touch them. You know, sweet potatoes. So she's out. Just teach her how to eat when she's out to keep her safe.
Right. Okay. That's pretty good. I look forward to getting that Dr. Dater and then kind of digging deeper to help figure out a deeper way to kind of heal her gut, because it sounds like, you know, she's on the right path. But
yeah. And she's cooperative. She knows what the feeling is, right? And maybe have her take, if she's, you know, magnesium baths help, you know, she's not necessarily going to want to take a magnesium bath every day, but if she does, have her do that. But also, you know, get her on some liquid magnesium that she could take internally.
She's on Omni Blue and Mago 7.
Okay.
But again, she's taking that just from, I don't even know if she's taking it right. So once we get the results, I'm going to have to, like, you know, ask a couple more questions, because the protocol that my daughter came up with, I didn't like, because they were making her take 2 teaspoons of, do you know what Omni Blue is? The trace mineral? So it's, you must have heard of, like, the trace mineral. So it's all the ocean minerals.
Oh, okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Right. So usually you would put a couple of drops in your water a day, like to kind of for the electrolytes or the minerals. You put a couple drops throughout the day. You might. So she, at her age, she's supposed to take a teaspoon. But because kids that are constipated, so magnesium seems to help, people were upping those doses to, like,
you know,
maybe a teaspoon
and a half. Yeah, but then you're getting all the rest of them. Right? You can have too much of the other minerals.
Right. Well, my daughter was giving her 2 teaspoons in a shot, like putting 2 teaspoons in a shot glass and filling it with water, and then she would have to shoot that with, and I'm like, why do you do that? Was so gross. It was horrible. And I'm like, Chris, I can't do that. That's not even recommended how to take it, and it's just wrong. Like, you can put like 5 or 7 drops in her water in the morning and then spread, you know, the rest of the teaspoon out throughout the day.
Well, you know, you can use like a powdered magnesium citrate as well. That can really be helpful to keep things moving and have her take it at bedtime.
Okay. All right. She does seem to be doing good. I left, and she had been going 11 days straight at least once or twice. She only missed one day that she didn't have bowel movement. And then I think she went with somebody, she went with her dad, and I think they went and they got tacos, but she was getting corn, which would be fine, except that that's what came up on her Zoomer, and then she had diarrhea for 2 days. So mm-hmm. I think corn definitely, you know what I mean? But she's been going, she hasn't been constipated, so I don't know if it's the gluten or I don't know what's worse.
Whatever came back, you get her off and you explain to her. And you explain to her that every time she eats these foods, it's damaging her gut even worse, that we have to fix the holes in her gut so that this stuff doesn't leak, and this is how we're going to do it. And she's like, who wants to be doubled over in pain with constipation, and have to do enemas and all that? So I think that, your best bet is working with her directly, and educating her. Okay?
Yep. Okay. Yep, I like that. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
All right. Other questions, *2 raises your hand. I'm going to go back to the Q&A in the chat and see who's there, if anybody. Looks like Diana. We'd love to talk about that. Let's open up your line. I'm just starting with the Curulin sample. Great. So I'll open your line in a second. Let me see what else is here. Great. All right. Jenny, you're doing it great. You had such great luck, success with the keto challenge. I'll be curious to hear what you think about this, if it's, same, different. I mean, because it's more measured and the other was not. But you were basically doing, when you did the keto challenge, based on what you were telling me, you were pretty much combining the two. So hopefully it'll be another great success. I'm going to open up your line. Diana. Oops, I think you have to unmute yourself because I just unmuted you. Jenny, already at 2.4 ketones. Yoo-hoo! I don't hear you. You need to check your web mic, or you may have to call in if your web mic's not working. So other than that, is anybody else? And I just want to say, typically on these calls, we're talking people, we're usually addressing people, your own health issues, but we have a light call today and there's not a lot of stuff. So I spent a lot of time with Robin knowing that what we were talking about would be very, very helpful, I think, for lots of other people, because a lot of you are dealing with, family members or grandchildren, children who it's difficult. It's really difficult with. So these are not the calls where like practitioners get on and ask about their patients, but stuff like that, especially when there's nobody in the wings waiting, I think is very useful for everybody to hear. So Diana's still not hearing you. Okay, she's going to come out and go back and call in. Let me give you the phone number. Let's see, call in. Here it is. I'll put this in the chat if anybody else is having trouble and needs to call in. There we go. Oops. There we go. All right. Okay, I'm putting this into the chat. And if anybody else needs to call, here it is. There's the phone number and the PIN. You have to make sure you put the PIN in. All right. Anybody else have any comments while we're waiting for Diana to get on? Comments or questions? Who else? Anybody else doing the fasting with food? I know Mary's doing it. I know Edie said you're going to start in a couple of days. Who else is on here that I can see that I know is doing it? Are you doing it, Jill? We have a lot. It's only day two, so you can still jump in. I'm going to put the link here. And even if you can't do it right now, I mean, just sign up so that you get the amazing guidebook that I put together, and I uploaded an updated copy of it last night, so if anybody wants to download it, and I think that'll be the final copy, at least through this, through the challenge, and then it probably afterwards I'll update it and, you know, make it prettier and all that. But it's a 49 pages, and it's got day-to-day menus, and I've run them all through Chronometer, and so there's nutritional values for each one. And this is an unusual kind of a challenge program for me, because usually I don't have people weigh and measure and all that. But this is a very specific protocol for getting the benefits of fasting while you're eating, and, you know, eating within certain macro ratios and eating within certain calorie ranges. So, and it also, you know, what it did for me, it made me realize how caloric some of these foods are. Oh, I see that Diana just came in on the phone. How caloric some of these foods are. Like, I'd make a nut pate and just sit down and eat the whole thing, and realize in putting it into Chronometer that it could have been 700 or 800 calories worth all at one time. So, there you go. Diana, your line is open.
Wow. That was fun. I don't know what's going on with my microphone. It usually works just fine on this.
Yeah, it usually does. Okay.
So we're just starting this experiment this morning.
Okay.
He's been having trouble with keeping his glucose numbers down, and we've had him on the diabinil for, oh, the last 3 or 4 months, but it's just not wanting to budge. So we decided we would try him on the Curulin rather than me, because I'm pretty stable right now, and I don't really want to mess with too much.
Right, right. You don't need to. Yeah.
So anyway, so we were going to do this with him, and so we started this morning, and we're doing a diet diary and following the directions as closely as we can. And he just about 1 minute ago did his first after-meal glucose, after his first dose. We put him on, it says to take 1 to 2 capsules per, with the meal, or after the meal. So since he's a large man, we decided we probably need to go with the 2. So anyway, he started out this morning at 153 fasting. For breakfast, he had his usual, which is a green smoothie and a small bowl of granola cereal with almond milk. And we just got a first reading, and it's 202. So we're planning on running this test for 5 days, because there was enough capsules in that bottle to do 5 days.
Right.
And then what we should do is probably do another round of another 5 days, going back to the original that we started before, because we weren't really tracking the after meal glucoses that closely, just time to time.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, that's usually what I recommend, is if you do, like, get a good 3 days worth before you start it, just so you see if you're still in the range, and then see. I mean, for those of you who don't know, this is a product that a company sent me a whole bunch of samples of to, you know, they want me to promote their product. But I don't know if their product works. I mean, I can read what they say it does. So I sent it to people who I knew were having some difficulties with maintaining blood sugars, and in spite of being on a good diet, and waiting for feedback from a lot of them. And a lot of them haven't given me feedback. So the company keeps calling me and saying, what do you think? What do you think? And I haven't gotten any feedback to tell them. So I really would like to see what happens. But here's the thing, right? I don't change what he's eating, but
right
after this test is over, he probably needs to change what he's eating.
Yeah. So, well, yeah, we definitely have to do something. We have to do something different, for sure.
Yeah. Eating granola in the morning, is it like a grain-free granola that you've made, or is it one that he bought at the store?
No, this is one that we bought at the bulk food store.
Yeah. So he really needs to change some things, right? And to go back. He had things under control for a while there, because you said he was A1C down to like 5. So
right. Yeah, but it's been creeping up slowly, and so is his weight. That's why we've been trying to add some different things to his regimen to see if we can get it back under control, and figure out what it is that's causing him to, you know, kind of lose what he's gained. So
yeah, I would go back to sweet spot principles, back and have him, you know, track and then do a metabolic reset again. So, you know, there's supplements and there's, you know, there's time and a place for supplements, and yes, helping with that, but they don't replace the good habits. So granola doesn't sound like something that should be in the diet of a diabetic.
Yeah. Not this particular one, apparently.
Yeah.
There are some other ones that we've been using that are the gluten-free variety.
I wouldn't do it. There's a paleo granola, which is made with coconut and chia seeds and other things like that.
Right.
But I wouldn't have him on at this point. You got to get him stable. And you know he can do it because he was. And then once he's stable, once he's on a good diet, you go, you know, it's still a little higher than we want. Then you look at the supplements to try to bring it down. I mean, obviously there's the core supplements you gotta, you know, we do all the time, right? But, I think the diet. So what is his typical lunch?
At lunch, we try to have our biggest protein meal of the day. Unfortunately, he's eaten a lot of French fries at lunch.
He shouldn't be eating any French fries, right?
I know.
That's the problem, right? It's not a specific nutrient deficiency. It's the dietary habits, and he shouldn't be eating French fries at all.
Oh, yeah, I know. I don't eat them anymore, but he's a stubborn man. He's very difficult to change. So I do what I can. Now, breakfast and dinner are smoothies, green smoothies, and we're both doing that. But it's that lunchtime meal that's still an issue for him. And part of it's the emotional attachment to wanting to eat like he used to eat. I try to temper as much as I can, but he's a big boy and it's kind of hard. So, we're definitely looking very closely at fixing this as much as we possibly can in any way necessary to include doing these diet diaries again until we figure out, you know, he's
what
got a picture of what it is that's causing the issue so that he can see it for himself. And we were really good about that when we first started Sweet Spot. But, you know, life happens and you get lazy and I'm not, but he is. So.
Is he eating anything with the green smoothie, the dinner one, or just the green smoothie?
We'll usually have something light, if anything, at all after the green smoothie. We usually have them about 5 p.m. and then try to fast for the rest of the evening. But with it getting into winter, sometimes it's nice to have a little warm bowl of soup.
You know what you might try with him? Here's what I would try. I would just put – is it just today was the first day that he took the supplement?
Yeah, this is the first dose that he's taking.
Put it to the side.
Okay.
Put him on this fasting with food thing.
Yeah.
And let's see where he is in 5 days. See if this works, because it's pretty heavy. You know, there's plenty of food in there. And it's, you know, it's good, healthy, hearty food. Or put him on the metabolic reset again. But I think you're just wasting, you know, you're wasting the supplement sample. I would just get as much as you can under control and get what the measures are and then start again. Even if it's just doing what he normally does for 3 days, monitoring it, seeing what the numbers are, and then doing it. But it sounds like it's deeper than needing a supplement at this point. It needs food.
Definitely needs some dietary corrections.
Yeah.
But part of that's going to be his mindset, too. He's going to
have
to.
That's true, right? But at least he stopped doing this. If he's not willing to do this fasting with food thing or the metabolic reset diet, then I would, just monitor him for 3 days.
Okay.
See what the numbers are. Really monitor, like the Sweet Spot way to monitor. See what it's at, and then do the supplement, because you don't know what his postprandial was before. And I'm not surprised if granola brings it up from 150 to 200. I'm not surprised at that.
Yeah, I'm not either.
No.
Actually, I'm not surprised either. But, you know, he is.
Yeah.
Which is interesting to look, the look on his face when he saw the number just before we finally got connected on the phone here. And the look on his face, I said, well, what is it? And he said, well, on this hand it was 202, and on this hand it's 253. So he's even getting different readings on his
it's probably still rising, is my guess.
We'll check it again.
Back to the measurement so he can see it. See, people think ignorance is bliss, and they do this thing for a while, and everything's good. They get it under control, and then they go back to their old habits thinking they cured themselves.
Exactly. And that's kind of where we're at, and I can kind of see it coming, but this was like an opportunity to open his eyes again.
Yeah, so get him to do this now. Say, we're going to stop the supplement because we're not going to waste it. What we're going to do is we're going to do 3 days minimally. You're just going to eat your normal food, and we're just going to track it and see where it's at.
That sounds much better.
What are you willing to let go of? Are you willing to mix up? Try the smoothie in the morning with just, you know, the grain-free granola, which is, you know, chia seeds, flax seeds, hemp seeds, you know.
Right. And we have that. So that's not an issue at all.
Yeah.
We just happened to, when we were down at getting my labs done a couple weeks back, we went to the store where we usually buy our bulk stuff, and they had, you know, these boxes of it's pretty decent stuff, comes out of Canada. And he used to eat it all the time, so he picked up a box of that.
Full blown, and now it sounds like he's back to that. So
he's getting close. Yeah, his last A1C was down at 5.6, I believe.
Yeah,
so it was rising already.
Right. So it's already rising into that.
Yeah.
Yeah, he needs to see it, right? He needs to not put his head in the sand, and he needs to see it.
That's where he buried it again. It's right back there in the sand.
We do that. We do that. Right?
Yeah.
Everybody does, has a tendency to that. When I go into late night eating and I'm traveling and I go, oh, screw it, I'm not going to measure my stuff. But the reality is, if I measure my stuff, I'm going to make changes. I'm going to go, whoops, that wasn't good. You know, so the measurement is so critical. It's such a behavioral modification tool. It really is.
Yeah, and it is. It's that comfort thing, the emotional attachment to wanting to have it, you know, like the good old days.
Substitutions, right? You find substitutions. Make them hick'em a French fries, right? Hick'em a French fries are yummy.
I wish we could find a hick'em in Idaho.
No, you don't have hick'em.
We have very little in Idaho. Well, at least where we live, on top of the mountain. So, there is alternatives. So
yeah, there's alternatives.
It's choices, though.
And make your own, and you can try it by boil the potatoes or bake them. Probably boil best. Boil the potatoes, and then you cut them, and you put them in the refrigerator.
Right, for 24 hours.
And then you cut them 24 hours, and then you cut them into French fry pieces. They'll be easier to cut because they'll get a little firmer. And then you try it and see. So you do it with the regular French fries, and then you do it with these. And it may make a difference because of the resistant starch. You may be able to handle it that way. So it's extra work.
Yeah,
but
it is. It's not really that. You just have to do it in advance. I've been trying to do the resistant starch thing myself with the potatoes because I do like potatoes. And that's, if I can get away with it, you know, it's not every day, but I'd like to have a grilled chicken breast and some mashed potatoes with some grass-fed butter. And that's to me my ideal lunch because it's, you know, good quality protein and blah, blah. But what I'm doing is I'm baking the potato or boiling it and then refrigerating it, then turning it around and putting it in my cast iron skillet and warming it up.
Yeah.
And then adding the butter that way. So
and
I can still have it.
Sugar?
Pardon?
Does that raise your blood sugar?
No. Mm-mm.
Okay.
Everything's fine. My blood sugar is doing really well.
Good.
And the resistant starch isn't raising it, so I'm very happy about that. I mean, I've learned to adapt a little bit, but like I say, he'd rather have his in French fry form, and I haven't quite figured out how to do that. Bake or boil the potato, and then it gets so soft. How do you turn it into a fry? But I'll figure it out.
So
I mean, if he's willing, I'll do it.
Well, here's what you do. You cut them first while it's hard. You cut them into French fry pieces. You put those pieces into the steamer.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And then you put them in the refrigerator already cut.
Okay.
And then you do a quick, you know, French fry, baked French fries, and you can stick them in the oven and do it that way. Yeah.
Bake them in the oven instead of trying to fry. Okay, well, that'll make sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fantastic. All righty.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, we will do that. We will set aside, do a couple of days of the befores, and then we'll start the experiment again. But we will keep a detailed diary on everything we're doing, and so you can see it, and we can see it. And then when we get done, we'll pass it on to you if you're interested.
That'll be great. Because if you have that's something I can pass on to these guys and say, here's what happened, right? Whether it's good or bad, right? It didn't make a difference, right? Or it did make a difference.
Right. And that was the diabinil was, it seemed like it was helping, because it was bringing things back down again. But, apparently the diet is more a big part of what's happening with the sugar than anything else.
Absolutely.
So, anyway, we'll be happy to try and at least compare notes on how this is all working so that you'll have some ammunition.
Yep.
On that. Okay. Well, thank you very much, Dr. Henry.
I'm hoping it's something that's a great thing that for people who are doing the best they can, but they're still not getting their sugars down, that this helps them. That's what I was hoping for, because it sounded like a lot of good herbs in there and a lot of good research, but, you know, I can't just promote something because somebody says it's good. I have to have firsthand knowledge of why it's good.
Exactly. I agree. And I looked at the label and all the herbs that they're listing, and it's quite different than the diabinol. The diabinol has some other things in it besides herbs.
Yeah, well, it's an Ayurvedic formulation, and he explained to me that he was through this family like that was making it, and it's only made in this specific place in India, and then has been shipped over. So it's you know, they're quality controlling it, but it's a matter of does it work?
Right, exactly. And we will, like I said, we'll take notes and see what we can do as far as providing you with the proper information.
Awesome.
And hope that something works here.
Yeah.
At least we get him back on the diet track where he's more observant of what it is he's putting in his body.
Absolutely.
So we can get him back on track. So thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Thank you for the feedback. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right. Let's see. Angelica left. Diana's on. Fasting and food. I put that in. Okay, no more questions. So thank you guys all for being here. Thank you all for being here. I'm going to open the line up to say goodbye formally. And have a great rest of the weekend. And if I don't get to talk to any of you before the holidays, have an enjoyable Thanksgiving. Really stick to your guns about your health being the top priority. And make fun things. On Saturday in my class, I'm going to be doing some fun holiday-type substitutions. Gluten-free deliciousness, and we'll take it from there. So have a great one. I'm going to open up the lines, say goodbye on the count of three. One, two, three. Bye. 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 Bye.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye.